Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob. You guys can text in your questions for John, 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, and we will get to as many of those as we can before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. Pretty much a bummer, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's an understatement. I put out a poll question. I'm curious to see how you would answer this. And for those just tuning in, you can find it on Twitter, at Bob Stelton or at Wyman and Bob. Simple question. Who is most to blame for the Seahawks' loss? I gave you four options because that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Coaching staff, Russell, the O-line, or the defense? Right now, the coaching staff is running away with it 68.2%, 964 votes in so far. Where would your vote go?
Again, that's a natural thing because it's like, okay, lose a game, fire coaches. Simple act. That's what everybody wants to do. And it's like, I know – this is not trying to avoid the question. I know when asked about it yesterday and Saturday night, it was like, it's everybody. I mean, because again, the coaching staff didn't do a good job. The offensive line didn't do a good job. Russell didn't do a good job. You know, they didn't do a good job of adjusting to the defense that was being played by the Rams. The defense couldn't stop the run. And, you know, then there was a few holes in the secondary as far as the passes. But I guess if you have to pick one, which again, I think picking one is wrong because this was a team loss.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Big team loss. And again, it's like if you pick one, I think you're overdoing it. But I guess you have to kind of pin it on Russell. He's the quarterback.
Yeah, and I guess that's fair. And he would say that too, I think. Look, I mean, high risk, high reward, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You get $35 million. You're the quarterback. You're the leader of the team. I mean, you have to accept that. And I think that's part of it. And, I think that how much of do you think, John, that goes into the makeup of a quarterback? I think it's huge that you understand that you're going to be the one that's most culpable, whether you like it or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, okay, the coaching staff usually gets the first criticism and the quarterback gets the next. And, you know, I already saw that some people are now saying, hey, they should trade Russell Wilson. But it's like, oh, my.
I'm glad no one's overreacting, John.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, you overreact. And, you know, because basically that game trashed what was a kind of a gift season. And where I say gift season, it's not going to be as easy next year getting to 12 wins. And the reason for that is that the schedule is that much tougher. I mean, you look at the schedule, and they only had six games against teams with 500 records or better, only six. Next year, they have 10. Now, again, a couple of those teams are going to drop down. New Orleans is going to drop down because they're going to have so many changes and probably won't have Drew Brees. We'll see about other teams and how they match up. Can they, you know, stay where they are with a tight cap going down $20 million? That's still to be determined. But, you know, this one turned out is kind of a gift in the sense that you get the first five games, you know, three of the five teams that you played in the first of 5 weeks of the season, which were non-division games, were among the worst defenses in football. You know, New England couldn't stop the run. They were the highest rated of the defenses. Miami was okay, but, you know, they were put up a lot of points, a lot of yards against defenses that you can beat. Then in the second half of the season, and this is where I think that the coaching staff and everybody's got to study, is that what happened in the let Russ cook scenario? Did defenses now figure out the best way to stop the cooking? And I think what you saw was that, you know, you play more zone, you know, because, again, you had a too deep zone. And so you have five guys underneath. And so if you can get away with rushing four, then you have seven guys that are going to be in coverage. And you start taking away some of the elements, you know, like some Tyler Lockett things, some DK Metcalf type of things. You know, yesterday, of course, it was interesting because, you know, the Jalen Ramsey was able to get more man than he did in the second Ram game. I think he had like about 25, 26 plays where he matched up in man and held DK to four catches for about 44 yards. Now, a couple of the plays that against the zone, DK was able to beat and get the touchdowns and all those things. But when you look at the big picture, you know, it looked like, you know, teams have figured out a way to contain the Russell Wilson offense. And again, one thing that I think is not getting enough criticism is the inconsistencies with the running game. That to me, and Pete Carroll kind of kept stressing that, and the more I was thinking about it, it's true, because, you know, I know injuries did hurt. I mean, they didn't have six games with Carlos Hyde. They didn't have four games with Chris Carson. But when your lead running back, Chris Carson, only has what was it?
16 carries.
Yeah, but for the season,
oh.
I mean, he got 144 carries and about 683 yards. So when your lead back is only averaging, because again, he missed 4 games, 12 carries a game, that's not good enough. And then the equation goes bad in the sense that I know that Carlos Hyde, he averaged about 8 carries a game. You know, Russell Wilson had to gain over 500 yards, so this team could get over 120 yards rushing. That's not good enough.
Yeah,
that's
and not four times he was the leading rusher, John.
Yeah,
Russell
yeah.
was.
Yeah, and that's where the problem comes down, because, you know, they ended up 40.2% run, 59.8% pass. That's not Pete Carroll football. And you can see, and you can say, oh, well, the game's changed. You've got to be passing the football. Well, tell me why the New Orleans Saints are among the leading rush teams as far as percentage. We know Baltimore is up there. The Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and you know he's a pass-happy type of guy, a pass-happy type of team. You know, they were seventh as far as, you know, rushing percentage. Seventh. This team was 19th.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Because I want to say they were like 52-48 last year.
Yep.
Yeah. 51-49. Well, but yeah, I think you hit on it, John. At one point, you got DJ Dallas and Travis Homer as your running backs back there. I mean, it's not as if they had a healthy Chris Carson and just said, you know what, we're not going to use him. You know, and then when he did come back, they're baby-stepping him. He clearly wasn't 100%. So I think him missing the games, him coming back and them working him back in, and Hyde suffered his injuries as well. So to me, there's a reason for that. But you wrote a story about it, agreeing that they need to get back to running the ball more, which when people hear that, John, sounds like Pete is stubborn. Sounds like Pete is sticking with what makes him comfortable and not what is going to allow them to get over the hump. 12 wins and winning the division's all fun until you lose in the first round. You go, well, why does it matter? You've got to adjust. And people feel like Pete and Shoddy didn't adjust to what was happening out there.
But let's put it this way, and this is where I think people go into the stats. It's fantasy. It's let Russ cook and all those different things. Six of the top seven teams, as far as percentages, either made the playoffs, or this is, we're talking rushing to football, made the playoffs or in the top seven in percentage of runs or in the divisional rounds. Like, for example, four of the eight teams that are in the divisional rounds were among the seven top rushing teams as far as percentage in football. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you look at it and say, okay, well, Baltimore's a running team. Cleveland's a running team. Okay, we accept that. Now, would you consider Sean Payton a passing coach or a running coach?
They got Kamara. They were,
I think, second or third rushing the football. And then, you know, you got Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and they were seventh as far as, you know, percentage running the football. So, again, it's like you can say that, it's a passing game, go to the passing game more and all that stuff. But three things can go wrong when you pass. You can get an incompletion, you can get a sack, or you can get an interception. And so, you know, what happened this year? They got the interceptions more than they've had in a Russell Wilson type of year. You know, the percentages came down as the season went on against better defenses. And that's the thing that, again, concerns were coming back next year, where, you know, where this year they had six games against 500 teams or better. Next year they have 10. So it's a harder path to win the division and a harder path to get to the, you know, get deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you ask that question. Yeah, I would not think of the Packers as a running team, and I would not really think of the Saints.
Aaron Jones and Kamara are pretty good backs, man.
Yeah, they are, and that's the reason why their offenses are so good. I'm with you on that. The other thing was takeaways, John, and, you know, I want to say the one team that was in the top 12 that didn't make the playoffs was Miami, and they were 10-6. But the takeaways just entirely dried up for the Seahawks, and, you know, the – giveaways were a little bit more than usual. I mean, Russ had, what was it, a four-game streak where they had, I think, 10 giveaways?
Yeah, well, in the first four losses they had, he had 12 giveaways.
12, wow. Yeah, and that's just so un-Russell-like. But also just at the end, as far as the takeaways go, and you saw it yesterday, they went -2. And every single time they've gone, you know, zero or positive, they've won games. And That's something that, you know, I don't know how you account for that.
Yeah. But same with the running back theme. It's like when your top two backs. Now, again, this is where things have worked out so well for Pete in running the football. Because, again, you had Chris Carson with back-to-back 1,000-yard years. Well, when you put together the numbers for Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde, I think it's like 1,038 yards total. That's it. And it's like that's not good enough. And when you're getting 123 yards rushing the football, but you have to get 500 yards plus from Russell Wilson because those aren't designed runs. Most of those are, you know, plays that he's expecting to pass the football. So even when you look at that 40.2 percentage, is that that doesn't count. That doesn't include the runs that he's running and scrambling. So really, what you're looking at is it's probably 35% as far as their runs and 65% pass, and that's not a good formula right now in the National Football League.
John, as far as the offense overall goes, I read this tweet. I retweeted this from Robert Turbin, who obviously knows this system as well as anybody. And last night he sent out a tweet that says, just going to say this respectfully. For Seattle to have a bunch of dynamic players offensively, they sure do run an undynamic style offense. Predictable. Need to throw some sauce in that thing, is what he says. So doesn't necessarily mean you throw it all over the field, but maybe being a little less predictable, maybe mixing up the tempo. I know Russell has talked about that. They haven't done that. What do you, when a player who knows that offense as well as he does is saying it's predictable, what do Pete and Shoddy need to get together and say, all right, yeah, we do want to lean on the run, but we need to get creative with this?
What we saw at the end of the season, I'll see if Dave agrees, kind of reminded me when the season started in Denver and Chicago a couple years ago, because that was Brian Schottenheimer's first year. He was so enamored with Russell and the throwing ability that he threw caution to the wind and have him pass, pass, pass. And, they ended up losing the two games and not looking like a Seahawk offense. Pete Carroll sat down with him and they professionally talked through it and went back to the running game and then started getting the wins. But it was the end of the season just reminded me of the what we saw in the first two games against Denver and Chicago. And then the concern is that, particularly early in the game, and it was driving me crazy because it drove me crazy off and on. Here they are taking outside running plays, outside the tackle. It's like, stop. You can do it against the teams that aren't as good with the speed, but this has got great speed on the Rams' defense. And all you're doing is playing to their strength. If you're going to be trying running outside a right tackle, running outside a left tackle, it's not a good formula against that particular team. It's going to work against the Jets. It's going to work against the Washington football team, but it wasn't going to work against the Rams. Fortunately, after a slight bit, I think it was like second quarter, because, again, they had so many three and outs and so few plays, they finally started running inside the tackles, and you saw there was some success there.
Yeah, that's what happened the second time they played them.
Yeah.
You know, I put it on the defense, John, just because I was so impressed with their defense, and I keep saying this like I'm threatening someone. They better shut down Green Bay's offense, but I don't know if they're that good. You know, we'll see, but it's been kind of frustrating. But I'm with you on this. And then the other thing is, I don't remember how many times they went over 100 yards, but they never had a 100-yard rusher. The closest was Chris Carson with 84, and that was at Arizona. So yeah, that I agree that it's got to be the run game. But that was all the talk that let Russ cook. I also like it when people say, well, we need a creative play caller, like define creative.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? I know this, fans and like the guy who plays Madden that texts in that I just responded to. I mean, they like plays that work. Okay. How about that? We need a coordinator, John, who can call plays that work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, come on, man. Anyway, it's just tough in the NFL. And, it's just very disappointing, I think, because Russ set a higher standard. But I'm with you that, they never established themselves, and like two in a row where, I remember Ray Roberts was talking, I think there was a half and then there was an entire game where they never ran the ball twice in a row. So they just never really committed to it. But I guess, early on, they didn't really have to. So maybe that's what got them in the end.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, okay, you have to adjust your game as best you can, and they didn't make enough adjustments. And again, Because now people are going to be call, like, just like early in the season, calling for the firing of Ken Norton Jr. They're going to be calling for the firing of Brian Schottenheimer. And it's like, no, because you don't know what you can get to replace him, because it's a diminished group of play callers out there. Because, you know, we're up to seven coaches right now that are going to be, fired, because with Doug Peterson getting fired, that's seven. And, you know, the young offensive coaches, the Arthur Smiths, the Brian Daboles, you know, those guys, you know, they're going to go to teams. And who's going to be left that has play calling experience? And so, you know, that's the devil that you don't know. It's like almost, oh, so you go ahead and you want change with the Jets and you hire Adam Gase because he's known as a good play caller, and he goes 4 years and it's nothing.
Hey, what do you make of the news that the Seahawks passing game coordinator, Dave Canales, is interviewing for the Vanderbilt offensive coordinator job? And obviously, if he gets that, there's going to be an opening there. Do you expect much turnover, if any, on this coaching staff?
There'll be some. I mean, you know, because they do have to sit down and talk through the coordinator thing with Ken Norton Jr. and Brian Schottenheimer. I'm assuming that they're both going to be back. But no, it's like you're going to lose coaches because, they've already lost, or Pete Carroll lost a son to Arizona.
Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and, you know, if you want the opportunity, if you're going to be a quarterback coach, to be able to coordinate, I mean, they still have Austin Davis, who I think is going to be a pretty good coach too. But no, there's going to be turnover, and particularly when you're on a staff that has more than 20 coaches, you know, guys are going to go for other opportunities if their contracts are up and they have a chance. And Pete's going to be real good as far as promoting guys that coach for him.
Hey, John, the Steelers rookie wide receiver Chase Claypool went on TikTok. I'm not sure what that is. Said bad loss, but the Browns are going to get clapped next week. So all good. Yeah, and then you had...
Boy, they're not learning, are they, from Juju Smith-Schuster
dancing on the logo and everything.
Saying they're the same old Browns, and he didn't see anything special about them. And,
yeah.
Oh boy, they got worked.
But my gosh, John, what in the heck happened there? I mean, 11 games in a row, they win and then lose four of their last five and lose to the Browns in the
playoffs. Well, it kind of makes you wonder about Ben. Now, again, where it looked like the first half, Ben was just terrible. Now, it doesn't... You know, you saw this in the Super Bowl against Denver. It's like, okay, when one of your first plays, the quarterback snaps the ball over the quarterback's head, and it's like, I know Ben's tall, but he'd have to be about 18 feet tall to be able to catch the thing that Marquise Pouncey sent over his head, and it goes into the end zone for a touchdown. Then you come out and you throw an interception, and then it went back to working those short passive game that was so predictable for other defenses that didn't work for 3.5 games. It's like, wow, look how bad that is. And then, of course, you know, Ben did get hot in the second half, and he threw for 324 yards and four touchdowns, almost brought them back. But you're not going to overcome a 28-0 lead in the first quarter. I mean, they were doomed from the very beginning because they played horrible.
So what do you think the future holds for him? The big story was watching him sit on the bench, very emotional, and he didn't play well. I mean, he threw four interceptions in that game, John. I know he threw for 500 yards, but you had to when you're trailing by a million. So,
oh, yeah.
What do you make of his future?
I still think they'll stand by him. They'll have to evaluate it because, again, they've got major cap problems. And, you know, if they're going to keep him, they're going to have to, you know, give him about $20 million to spread over 4 years so they can bring the cap number down, because his cap number is 41.5. If they let him go, they've got over $22 million in dead money. So, and they have no quarterback to replace him. And then, you know, what makes it even tougher is they're sitting at the, you know, lower part of the draft. I mean, what they're sitting with the 24th pick, one below Seattle. And so, you know, they're not going to be able to pretty much draft a quarterback that's going to be the equal of Ben Roethlisberger.
Hey, John, how about this Jared Veld here, who started for the Colts on Saturday, and now he's signing with the Packers. First player in NFL history to play two postseason games for two different playoff teams.
Yeah, here's a guy that was really contemplating retirement and had to be talked into coming in and just playing for the game on, because, you know, he signed to the practice squad. He got the chance for Indy to be able to bounce up and be able to, you know, get the start, because of the injury to Anthony Costanzo. And now all of a sudden the Colts end up losing. And so, you know, he's out there on the practice squad, and the Packers end up signing him. So I think that's great. And, of course, David Bakhtiari, their left tackle, blew out an ACL, so he's not going to be able to play until next year. So here's Veldheer, you know, at the end of his career, ready to retire, and now he's two games into the playoffs.
Boy, can you imagine? I mean, then he gets a trip to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's got to be. be
pretty fortuitous route there.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like that. Remember how C.J. Anderson came back and you know, he got fat because his wife was pregnant and he didn't keep himself in great shape.
He put on sympathy pounds.
Sympathy pounds.
Blame the wife.
Yeah, and
sure.
So then he goes signs with the Rams. He outperforms Todd Gurley and he ends up going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's right. Hey, John, what'd you make of the kid from Washington? Was it Taylor Heineke? Is that how you say his last name?
Heineke.
Heineke. I like to call him Heineken because it's like, okay, you have a Alex Smith and a beer. But
the
beer played pretty well.
He played pretty well. Is he a guy that you think they'll look at as a potential for that spot? Or is he just, what do you think they do there?
Oh, I think they look at him as a backup. Competing for the backup job because you understand there's a history with Ron Rivera and Taylor Heineke because Heineke's last team, at least that he played for, was the Carolina Panthers back with Ron Rivera. And so just like with Ron trying to adjust to the quarterback position and a bad Dwayne Haskins who's no longer there, they bring over Kyle Allen to try to at least fill the void and see if they want him to be the starter. And then Allen gets injured and he's out for the season. Now they come back and they go with Heineke and you got to tip the beer barrel to him because he kept them competitive. They weren't going to win with Heineke at quarterback, and they probably weren't going to win with Alex Smith at quarterback, but they played a pretty good game, and at least it shows that he can still play in this league.
I was pretty happy for Lamar Jackson. He did a hilarious post-game interview, by the way, where he called himself a dumb bleep, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. It was a really dumb throw by me. But, he ran off, and that's quite a little rivalry there between the Titans with the stomping on the logo and all that stuff, man. It seemed like, though, at the end, didn't I guess Harbaugh and why can I never remember the coach for the Titans?
Mike Vrabel.
Vrabel. They kind of made up.
He was a linebacker, by the way.
I know, John. But anyway, I always want to say Rabel, and that's what screws me up. And I'm like, I know it's not Rabel.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He was a wide receiver.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with
him.
But here's the interesting thing about that whole mix, because now, my big thing before the game is that young quarterbacks take time to learn and win playoff games. Well, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson both learned. Like the big thing for Josh, he was hot. He stayed hot in the game, and he only made the one mistake that could have cost him, and he was able to get away with it because, he's always known to try to do too much, particularly in the latter part of games. So here he was being sacked, and instead of throwing the ball away or just taking a sack, he tried to get out of it and turned it into a 23-yard loss. And so now they're sitting there with like a second and 31. And so that wasn't good, or like a third and 31, or whatever it was. So that wasn't good. But he played well. And then Lamar Jackson wiped out all his demons. His demons were not winning a playoff game and throwing at 51%. And his demons were, never being able to come back from a 10-point deficit. He got both. And so now what's interesting is Buffalo's not real good stopping the run. The Ravens come in averaging over 200 yards against the run. And here you have an AFC that has, for the first time in NFL history, four quarterbacks, 25 or younger, average age 24.5, one in Patrick Mahomes from the 2017 draft, and three of the six taken in the 2018 draft.
Interesting stuff.
And by the way, in the NFC, 37.5 is the average age of the quarterbacks. 43-year-old Tom Brady, 41-year-old Drew Brees, 37-year-old Aaron Rodgers, and 26-year-old Jared Goff.
Yeah, those relics are getting it done, huh?
Yep.
A bunch of fossils out there.
By the way, that did happen roughly in 2008, if you remember, because in that year, you had four quarterbacks in the divisional round that were like three from the 2018 draft, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, and also, Philip Rivers. And you had a rookie in Joe Flacco, and then four veteran quarterbacks like Kurt Warner and and all these other guys, Jake Delhomme. You had all these other old quarterbacks. So you had a history like that, but this one even tops it.
By the way, John, I'm no longer making fun of Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Oh, he's tough.
I'll tell you what, man. I mean, I got a lot of admiration for him.
Yeah, he gutted it out. He was throwing flutter balls up there, and they were good enough. So
you're going to give him a thumbs up?
Look at that.
Nicely done, John. You always go out on top.
See you later,
John.
There's a mic drop.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
See you, John. If you missed any of today's cold hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, the offense taking the majority of the blame for Saturday's loss, but the run defense was a big, big issue. We'll see what Dave Wyman thinks went wrong in that entire situation. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company, coming up in less than 15 minutes. Talk about a few different things in sweeping the dial, most of it centered around the Rams. Let you hear what Jared Goff had to say after the game. He was feeling pretty good. Well, I'll just put it that way. Feeling pretty chest is puffed up. He was feeling pretty good about things, and he earned it. So we'll let him have that. But defense was not the major story. It was for you, Dave, but it's losing in the poll. And I don't think you're probably surprised by that at all. I put out a poll question today on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, at Bob Stelton or at Wyman and Bob. Simple question: who is most to blame for the Seahawks' loss? We got over 1,000 votes so far. I gave you four options: coaching staff, Russell Wilson, offensive line, or defense. Right now, coaching staff 67.9%, Russell 18.3%, O line 12.5%, defense, Dave, 1.3%.
Sweet. I'm part of the 1.3%.
You are. What went wrong out there? First, let me ask you about Jamal Adams. We touched on it briefly. He's dealing with two bad shoulders, bad fingers, two of which he talked after the game about he's got a torn labrum. He's going to get
surgery. Pete said he's going to have surgery.
Yeah, and he said he's going to get surgery on his hand as well. So, you know, we're giving Jared Goff credit. Now it's different. He's got to throw the ball with a bad thumb, but still going out there in a position where you are required to hit. You're required to make contact. Not as a quarterback, you can try to avoid it, but he's got to go out there and tackle. He's got to use those shoulders. So I'm sort of torn between giving him credit for just being gutty and getting out there and wondering would they have been better served if Ryan Neal were there? Not saying he's the equivalent, but maybe an injured, physically compromised version of Jamal was maybe not the best thing? Or do you feel like he wasn't a lie? He was able to get enough done to justify his presence.
Well, it's funny. I mean, do you remember the number of hits that he had where he broke up passes? One was down when they were backed up at their own 10.
Yeah.
And he came up and he hit with his right shoulder.
Yeah.
His left shoulder is injured.
Yeah. Well, the right shoulder is the one that was injured before the left shoulder, too. He's got two separate injuries.
Oh, that's right.
Remember?
Yeah.
He had a bad shoulder.
But
it was the right one.
The right shoulder was okay for this game. So he was able to make those kinds of tackles. And he had a number of plays in that way. But then there was a number, well, first of all, very early on, the completion to Cooper Kupp on the sidelines.
The flutter ball?
Just got passed. It was like very early on. It was like it was from Wofford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And it was like maybe a 15 to 20 yard out. And he jumps it, and then he puts his
upfield hand up to get an interception.
But if you put your backfield hand up, the length of your back is what you gain, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so if you put your hands out in front of yourself and put one forward, so that your back is to the quarterback, you're going to get a longer reach. But he couldn't raise that arm, so he had to go with the right arm, and it gets completed. So what do you say about that? I mean, yeah, that's the reason why. I mean, but does Ryan Neal even get there? I mean, I don't know if Ryan Neal is able to cover Cooper Kupp as tightly as Adams did. So that's the question you would ask there. Then, the play where Goff, where Pete challenged that whether he was past the line of scrimmage or not. You know, and on the broadcast, I regret saying this, but I said that was just a poor attempt at a tackle. I didn't really see that it was Adams, I guess. But, that also could have been because he was running facing the running back, Cam Akers, to his left. And I don't think he could get that arm up there.
Yeah.
So he ends up just diving and throwing his body on the ground to try to, get his legs. And he does not make the tackle. And then down on the goal line, he is supposed to sort of fold over into the gap. And first of all, he screws around with the tight end for some reason. I don't know why he did that. He went up and hit him. But then he wasn't, he was late getting over to his gap. But in order to make that tackle, he would have had to put his head across, and that would have involved, once again, his left shoulder. So, and I'm not saying he's the one that caused that touchdown, but those were, it's like three plays where probably nobody else makes that play, and then three plays where you can pretty much directly see, like a lot of times if a guy has an injury, you go, yeah, I think that was holding him back. Like these were very obvious that in these situations that's what didn't allow him to make plays. So, yeah, it's Paul Gallant asked me that question, you know, and I was like, I still think you're better off with him out there.
Okay. Now, as far as the, just the defense in general, what happened? What happened? Because, I mean, if we're being, you know, we always talk about the defense being penalized for turnovers. I mean, you had a pick six. That'll go against the defense, even though they're not on the field. And then you had the fumble from Reed, which was deep in their territory. It turned into a touchdown. So you scored, they scored 14 of their points, almost half their points off those two turnovers out there.
Yeah.
Now, they did blow the cover. I don't know what the heck happened on that Woods touchdown. I mean, at that point, I think everybody felt defeated. I'm sitting there watching and going, the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
He's wide open, and all of a sudden you see Shaquille sort of trail the play. Like, I don't know if that was his I don't know what happened there, but it was like they were just playing catch.
I know. Yeah, and that's why, you know, look, I was it's only 1.3%, but to me it was about the defense because, you know, all they had to do was hold them to what they did last time. And how hard could that have been compared to last time? And what you ended up doing is giving up 186 yards to a rookie. Now, he's a good one, Cam Akers is, from Florida State. We talked about him, you know, going into that game at Mora's request because – yeah, unfortunately, I think you jinxed us, Mara.
Yeah.
My bad, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, he went and had, of course, it's your
He had 131, by the way.
Total?
Yeah.
Total
yards? 28 carries, 131 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah, but then he also had, what?
He had
46 or something rushing.
Yeah, 45 receiving yards on two receptions.
Right, so it's around 180-something.
Yeah, total
so,
yards, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and two touchdowns, so... That's one thing. The other thing is it was a mini drive by Wofford because he got hurt, and then they came in and kicked a field goal after Jared Goff, I think, got sacked or something. But still, he kind of drove the field on you, and he's the guy from the AAF. And then you have Jared Goff, who can't throw a spiral and had his thumb, you know, surgically repaired. So, to me, that's on the defense. How do you let them march down the field on you in that way? So, yeah, to me, it's – and then the run defenses, they just have to be really a lot more physical. And I don't think – and like we were talking about Bobby earlier, I don't necessarily blame that on him. I just think that that's how they're having him play.
Right.
They're having him play like, okay, go under blocks and, you know, just sort of oh, we'll get to it more after the break. But, you know, there's some interesting things that that are going on in the run defense that I guess I don't understand. But it's certainly not all on Bobby, that's for sure. But there's just a sort of a lack of collisions, and there's a lack of, you know, just being very, you know, firm at the point of attack.
All right, coming up, the Rams used the Seahawks division win celebrations as bulletin board material. We'll hear what they had to say when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
All week we were told how good they are and how we, you know, snuck into the playoffs and come into their home place. And 2 weeks ago, you saw them smoking cigars and getting all excited about beating us and winning the division. And we're able to come up here and beat them in their own place. And it feels good. It feels really good. I think it's satisfying, but by no means are we any bit finished or fully satisfied. I think, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. And next week will be another challenge and we'll be ready.
The voice of Jared Goff gloating a bit after the win, and he earned it. I mean, got to give the guy credit. He didn't play brilliantly by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't the sharpest outing, but it was enough to get the win. He completed a couple of passes. Even when quarterbacks sneak on one of those plays, which I was surprised with the bad thumb.
Yeah.
But they obviously took note of the celebration of the Seahawks when they beat them before to win the division, and you know, Jamal Adams lighting up the cigar, and he made reference to that. So that clearly was used as a motivational tool for those guys. Some used it, apparently. Maybe others thought nothing of it, but there you go.
Well, what was wrong with that? I mean, he was celebrating that they made the playoffs. It wasn't like we whooped the Rams or anything like that. So I don't know why. Yeah,
well,
Jared
we played
Goff.
That sound a couple weeks ago where they were on the sidelines while the game was still going on, going, give me my cigar, bring me my hat and T-shirt. So I think the Rams didn't take kindly to that.
I gotcha. I missed that part, but as far as him doing it during the interview. But, yeah, I mean, good for Jared Goff. Again, I'm starting to like this guy. It's worrying me. I'm concerned.
Well, you like him because he showed a level of, not the way he played, because he wasn't sharp.
Yeah, but I mean, the toughness. But,
yeah, just to get out there with that thumb. And,
yeah, and he got it done. I mean, the one play where he dumps it off sideways to Akers that Pete contested, that was a really good play. And I didn't think he would. He all of a sudden looked like a playmaking quarterback. But, you know, he couldn't obviously throw the ball. But I'm rooting for his thumb to heal. I hope they go and whoop the Packers, but it's going to be a long shot.
Matt, I just want your take on the Seahawks. Are they a mess right now, or is this just a bad game
Man,
to end the season?
I mean, listen, really disappointing finish, really disappointing season. Couldn't stop the run yesterday. In that offense, no tempo, didn't have the running game going, couldn't find completions, couldn't find checkdowns. Guys, we said it before the show, checkdowns are sack beaters. And then what happened instead? Five more sacks. That field position game, it just is an offense that looked out of sync. And I think the word is identity. I think they got to go figure out this offseason what's their identity going to be, because that's the thing that this year was a roller coaster.
The voice of Matt Hasselbeck, couldn't agree with him more, because that's the way it's felt. First half of the season, they were one offense. Pete never seemed comfortable with it, despite the output. And then seemed like they've tried to pull it back into what he's more comfortable with, a grind it out, run the ball, ball control, everything he's been since he's been here. And they never found a rhythm, it felt like. They were just always felt kind of, they found ways to win, but they just never felt in sync. And I think he nailed it. They don't, you know, are they going to be that team? Is he going to put his foot down and say, this is what we do, this is who we are, we run that ball, we're a physical offense, and this is what we're going to be? Or are we going to be a sort of a combination of what you saw at the beginning of the year and that?
Well, and then remember, there was all the talk about Russ having to press because the defense was so bad.
Yeah.
So he had to kind of, you know, the entire team had to navigate that whole landscape there. So, yeah, they never did. Again, went through and looked. I mean, Russell had five. He was the top rusher four or five times this year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Carson never went over 100. They never, it was rare that they ran for over 100 yards. So it was, I do think that that's something that they need to come back to and, again, establish their identity and who they are. And Pete needs to get back to, you know, stifling defense, run the ball, take the ball away.
I mean, I saw it a couple times. I think we got it last week, you know, with Jalen being as dominant as he is, you know, they got to try to move Metcalf around, get him away from Jalen, and basically feature him. And that's a play that I knew was going to happen. I knew they were just going to try to feature him, get him the ball somehow, let him break tackles, and I just ran and jumped it.
Darius Williams explaining his interception on that play, and there's more notes here. We saw this as well yesterday. Rams reporter Lindsay Theory noted that there were 784 screen passes targeting wide receivers this past regular season. None resulted in an interception.
Yeah. Well, and you know, everybody was like, what are they trying to do here? Why would they run that play? That play is very common. Rabel calls it a smoke screen, and it's just a wide receiver screen. One guy blocks. Then, you know, the other thing you can do is, I've seen teams do is, you know, you fake the screen and have the guy who's coming out to block release upfield. And I've seen guys get wide open from that. So it's not a bad play. It's just that this guy happened to know it was coming. Darius Williams, that's now the third or fourth interception that he's gotten. You know, we talk about Floyd. He got seven sacks against him in three games, Russell Wilson. And then, you know, this guy picks off the ball for his third time because there was two in that first meeting. So, yeah, and he actually had another one in his hands.
Yeah.
Marius Williams did. And, again, here's a guy no most people haven't heard of that has been made into a fantastic player. And so, yeah, their defensive coordinator has just done a genius job this year.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. I want to ask you about one player. I think I know your answer to this, but it was a big debate on Twitter after the play happened, and that was Jamal Adams' hit on Wolford that knocked him out of the game. And I was immediately like, that's a great play. He's a runner at that point.
Sure.
He was not giving himself up. He wasn't sliding feet first. He was going head first, and he's a running back at that point. And he hit him with his shoulder. And I was like, that's the right call. It's a great call. And people were hitting me, oh, that's BS. And if that were Russell, you'd be screaming about it. I'm like, no, he didn't give himself up. He didn't slide. He was going in as a running back at that point. He becomes a runner. You see every single running play there are collisions. Often helmet to helmet. This was shoulder pad to helmet.
Well, yeah, and that's perfectly done. I'll just say this, though. He got lucky that his helmet didn't graze his helmet.
Right.
I mean, that could have easily ended up there. And anybody that thinks, I mean, you have to stop watching it in slow motion. And I would say the same thing for Pereira. Just when he says things like that, I just want to go, shame on you. Because you don't understand what's going on out on the field after all these years. You need to get down on the ground level. I always say this, that human reaction time has a speed limit. You can only... It's not the Matrix, okay? You can't just stop in midair and all of a sudden, I mean, there's two bodies coming together in space. It happens so quickly that there's just you're just happy to get a hit on a guy. So, yeah, to me it was ridiculous that they would even consider that. You certainly don't like the consequence of it. But look, you saw Jamal Adams afterwards over there talking to him and everything. Nobody wants that to happen.
Yeah, he's not trying to injure him.
Right.
He's trying to make the play. And again, he becomes a runner at that point. I think people feel like it's a quarterback running the ball. You can't hit him. No, no, no.
He becomes a running back.
He's the equivalent of Chris Carson at that point.
The other thing is, you know, I hope people don't use that as like a training film. Like, this is a situation. See, he used his shoulder. Because... your head is really close to your shoulder. Like I said, he got lucky that his helmet didn't hit him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you're making a play like that, I cannot describe how quickly things happen. And, you know, when you watch it on the super slow-mo, it's ridiculous.
It makes it seem like you could stop, look, readjust.
Right. All of that is happening just like that. I mean, it's a boom, boom. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it was sad for him, though. I mean, he leaves. Aaron Donald leaves the field for quite a while. How about Russell? Like, he's the rock that everybody breaks themselves against.
Yeah, he landed on, I don't know what, I never heard exactly what the injury was.
I think it was his rib.
Yeah, initially I thought maybe he just got the wind knocked out of him, but yeah.
That's because Russ landed on top of him.
Yep.
Beast.
Unfortunately,
it was a cheap shot by Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that should have been a flag, certainly. All right, that does it for us. Want to thank our guests, Jake Heaps and John Clayton, for joining us on the show. We're going to turn you over to the national championship game between Ohio State and Alabama. That is coming up. We are back tomorrow right here at 2 p.m. with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.